Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock and heavy metal. Two national radio shows, best-selling books, and host of That Metal Show on VH1 Classic. Now, Eddie's bringing his honest, no-nonsense approach and passion to the world of podcasting. You'll hear commentary, analysis, celebrity guests, and who knows what else. PodcastOne.com presents The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, new every Thursday on PodcastOne.com and, of course, on iTunes as well, always free to download or stream. And it's great to have you guys on board for another week. Hope you enjoyed last week with Vivian Campbell. Got into some great stuff with Vivian and made some news with that one, you know, information about the Def Leppard record and this band, The Last in Line, that he's doing and all this stuff going on in Vivian Campbell world. It was fun to talk to him. You know, I listened back to that podcast last week myself, and because, you know, sometimes when I talk to these guys, I'm doing these interviews, as weird as this sounds, I actually, there's things I miss that they say. So a lot of times, even though I, of course, do the interviews, I want to listen back and listen to them again myself. And I apologize that, you know, two things were worked against me as far as the audio quality on last week's interview with Vivian. One was that Vivian has a pretty good Irish accent still. I mean, even though he's lived in L.A. for a long time, he's still got a pretty heavy accent. But the other thing was his phone was just not sounding great. And I talked to him beforehand, and I said, how about we do it on a landline? He's like, no, my cell phone's great here. That's what I have. So, I mean, it was fine. I mean, you could hear everything, but a lot of interviews that I do sometimes are on phones. I mean, it's just the easiest way to do them for me, especially that based where I am versus where most of the artists are on the West Coast. But, you know, it was okay. You could hear everything, but I just thought the phone was not the best sounding, and that coupled with Viv's accent, sometimes you missed a couple things, had to go back and listen a couple times. But listen, it's still there. You should check it out. I think it's interesting what Vivian is doing with this band, The Last in Line. It's going to be very interesting to hear him play heavy guitar, which he hasn't done in a very long time. And as you heard in that podcast last week, I mean, I asked him point blank. I mean, his relationship with Dio has been well documented that it isn't the best and wasn't the best, I should say. But he shed some light on that from his perspective. And no matter how you want to slice it, the guy was an enormous part of the history of Dio. I mean, his playing, I mean, he was a star of that band as well. His playing, the songs, those first three records, especially the first two, extremely iconic. And I think it's really interesting, too, that he's got Vinny Appice and Jimmy Bain. I mean, the original Dio band together again. Now, it could never be the same without Ronnie, needless to say. But I'm going to be curious to hear what it sounds like. And I know that Dio disciples are out there, and that's kind of the sanction won by Wendy. And Wendy is a dear friend, and I'm so honored and grateful to do all this stuff for the Dio Charity Fund. But it's my job, doing what I do, to present all sides without any sort of bias from these artists and the things that they do. And Vivian's story is interesting. And I think, you know, after years of kind of renouncing the Dio stuff and not really wanting to claim any ownership of it, I think it's kind of cool that Vivian is doing that because they were his songs as well. And his playing, I mean, just hear him play like that is going to be really cool. So, as Vivian mentioned in the interview, who knows what's going to happen as to when it's going to come out and how it's going to come out. It's an enormous peeve of mine right now. As you guys know, if you've listened to me on my radio shows or what have you, that all these artists that do these sort of thrown together bands, they never last. They never make it. Sometimes they don't even make it to a live show. Sometimes they don't even make it a year. We already saw California Breed, which was my album of 2014, one and done. It's unbelievable And Vivian mentioned that with this Last in Line thing, it's going to be tough because Def Leppard have a very busy touring schedule coming up. My sources tell me Def Leppard will be going out doing a shed tour, the outdoor amphitheaters again this summer, and they will have maybe one or two bands on the bill with them. You're going to start getting a lot of these announcements about upcoming festivals and more importantly, the shed tours, the outdoor shows. You'll be hearing those start to get rolled out very, very soon. Everybody wants to get a jump on the concert dollar. More bands than ever are out on the road, so they're all going to be jockeying for position. You'll be starting to hear about summer tours being announced very soon. We already have the information about Rocklahoma Memorial Day weekend, Pryor, Oklahoma. Very excited to be hosting that once again. If you go to my website, eddietrunk.com, and hit the Rocklahoma banner, you can register to win tickets for the entire weekend, general admission tickets. Also enter to win tickets for M3, which I'll be hosting once again May 1st and 2nd in Columbia, Maryland. Check out my site, eddietrunk.com. Tickets, music news, the merch store. You can buy my shirts with my name. Stump the Trunk shirts just released. All sorts of cool stuff. Music news updated daily about the artists you care about. Email me through the site and read my blog, The Trunk Report. So important you do, because it's how I tell you everything that's going on in the world of radio, TV, and of course with this podcast. And I try to update it almost daily. Also just added something new called the Pick of the Week. You know we do that on That Metal Show. Now I'm going to be doing it weekly on my site. Take a look at some of the drop-downs and find that. And you can see what I'm into on any given week. And if you like it, you can hit a link and purchase it. So that's all on eddietrunk.com. Of course, I'm also on Facebook. Simply / Eddie Trunk. That's how you get me there. Instagram, Eddie Trunk Official. And outside of my site, I'm most active on Twitter, @ Eddie Trunk. So thank you for following to the 200,000 plus that do. That Metal Show is back with new episodes February 21st, the first new one. New start time, 9 p.m. Eastern, every Saturday for 12 episodes. I can't wait to tell you about the first episode's guest. I can't just yet, but I will be able to soon, likely will in the Trunk Report on my site. Another reason to keep an eye on that. But yes, That Metal Show is back. First new episode in almost a year. Debuts February 21st, 9 p.m. Eastern, repeating at 11 p.m. Eastern on VH1 Classic. Thank you all for your patience. It's great to be back with new shows. Speaking of TMS, the interview I have for you this week on this podcast is with Jakey Lee. Also joining him throughout the interview is bassist Greg Chason, who was in Badlands with Jake and recently rejoined Jake in Red Dragon Cartel, his current band. Jakey Lee is an interesting story because on That Metal Show, we do the Whatever Happened To feature. And I am asked constantly, or was asked constantly, whatever happened to Jakey Lee. So a number of years ago, I went on this sort of fact-finding mission to try to track him down. And I found out he was living in Vegas, and I tracked him down through a guy by the name of Ron Mancuso. Ron used to be in a band called Beggars and Thieves, and he lives in Vegas. He has a studio. He does production. And I went out and visited him. His family has a phenomenal restaurant in Vegas called the Bootleggers Bistro. So I went and had dinner with him, and he said he was working with Jake. And I said, you know, we're trying so hard to get Jake, and people want to know what's going on with him. So through a series of a lot of meetings with Ron and discussions, I finally got in touch with Jake. Ron connected us. And, of course, Ron was at the center of the whole Red Dragon Cartel thing. He co-wrote the record, produced the record. He had a lot to do with Jake coming back and playing guitar again and getting this band together. And he was the catalyst for Jake and I meeting. Well, if you watch That Metal Show early on, we had Jake since be a guest and play on a couple of occasions on That Metal Show. The very first time we had him on, though, we did a special from Vegas with Vince Neil. And we had Jake walk across the back of the shot. Like, we were searching for Jakey Lee. We couldn't find him. Oh, wait a minute. There he goes. He just walked by. And I'll never forget, people got so pissed because they were like, how do you have Jakey Lee? And you didn't talk to him. He was right there. Well, obviously, that was a setup. And the reason why we didn't talk to him then is because Jake wasn't ready to talk. he didn't really have anything going on to discuss, and he wasn't ready to talk. But I knew he just kind of wanted to tease it and let people know that he was out there. And then, of course, I knew that when he was ready to talk, he would do it with me, both on my radio show and TV show, as he did. And since we had Jake play on the show, we reintroduced him on That Metal Show, and of course, we interviewed him as well. So now I've gotten to know Jake very well, seen many shows with him, hosted the first ever Red Dragon Cartel, which the first Red Dragon Cartel show, which was at the Whiskey in L.A. and is well documented, was somewhat of a disaster. That's touched upon in the interview you're about to hear. But I've gotten to know him well, and I've seen the band evolve, and I've seen them play live a bunch of times, and they've really become a very tight-knit unit. Unfortunately, the guy who was our cat, the way Jake and I met, and really the guy at the core of the whole Red Dragon Cartel thing, Ron Mancuso, is now no longer in the band. And it's not a good situation, and this stuff happens all the time, unfortunately, in bands, but you know, there is a falling out, there is an issue, and Jake has replaced him with Greg Chason, who, if you're a Badlands fan, you'll know played with Jake on all the Badlands stuff. And Greg, as I mentioned, you'll hear in the studio as well during this interview. So all of this is covered. And the one thing that's interesting about Jake, and everybody knows that Sharon Osbourne she doesn't like me. And I don't even know the woman. And all I can figure it out is she doesn't like the truth. She doesn't like people speaking the truth about things that have gone on in Ozzy's career that she was behind. And I like talking to the unsung heroes just as much as the big stars. So I like talking to guys like Bob Daisley, who wrote so much of Ozzy's stuff from the first record through No More Tears and played bass on it. I like talking to Jakey Lee, who wrote Bark at the Moon but wasn't credited and couldn't get paid on it. And for the first time in the interview you're about to hear, reveals how and why that happened. And listen, if it reflects badly on Sharon or Ozzy, that's not my fault. She's the one who made those deals. She's the one who did that. I just like getting the story. I have no agenda other than that. But if you know my story with Sharon Osbourne, who, again, I do not know, she prevents Ozzy from coming on That Metal Show because, God forbid, we may bring up some of this stuff. As a result, for a long time, I was on Sirius XM radio on the Boneyard when it became Ozzy's Boneyard, branded with Ozzy, with Sharon controlling it. I couldn't stay on that channel anymore, so I had to be moved one number down. It's all so silly and so ridiculous, especially for somebody who has a platform herself on TV and loves to tell it like it is from her vantage point. But I guess, there's certain things that, you don't talk about. But I don't buy into that. And I think it's important that people like Bob Daisley, who I'll have a podcast with at some point, and Jakey Lee get their stories out. So to that end, in this interview, Jake talks about how he wrote Bark at the Moon and how and why it came to be that he didn't get paid for it or credited for it. And he said it on That Metal Show. And as a result, he was disinvited from going to see Black Sabbath. I mean, how ridiculous and childish and petty is that? Ugh, it's just, don't even get me started. It's sickening. The hypocrisy of it and the phoniness of it is ridiculous. That the guy simply said what he did. He wrote Bark at the Moon. There's never been nobody, and again, I love Ozzy, so this is no sort of attack on Ozzy. It's just the truth. But Ozzy Osbourne has never been a songwriter. Anyone will tell you that. That's not a knock on him. There's plenty of singers that aren't songwriters. By all accounts, he only writes melodies. He doesn't write lyrics. Geezer Butler wrote the lyrics in Black Sabbath. It's just the truth. But for some people, the truth is a huge threat. And I'm glad that Jake was able to get his story out to some degree about the Ozzy stuff. And not just the Ozzy stuff. That's just a small part of it. the Badlands stuff, the Ray Gillen stuff, and what happened with Red Dragon Cartel from that awful first show to where they are now. So all of that is covered in the interview you're about to hear with Jakey Lee and Greg Chiasson. Again, I love talking to the guys that you don't hear from all the time, because you're going to get a very different perspective from them instead of the sort of sound bites and very canned answers that you would expect from some of the bigger names out there. So get ready. Jake is coming up. I hope you're going to enjoy this one. I think you will. Jakey Lee on the Eddie Trunk podcast this week. Now, hey, check this out. Valentine's Day. Oh, I know there's some great romantics in my audience out there. I know you guys that are rock and metal fans, you are the ultimate romantic people. You crank up your Slayer records and deliver those roses to your loved ones. Well, it is Valentine's Day, and however you celebrate, you know, you got to come up with something. Valentine's Day is like a huge deal now. You got to deliver the goods. You got to get something. A gift of some sort. Maybe a metal fan. You buy him one of my books, Essential Hard Rock Heavy Metal Volume 1 or 2. Right? Not bad. Anything you want to get as Valentine's Day is approaching for your loved ones, whether it's romantic or not romantic, just make sure you do it through Amazon.com. And you know why by now. Because Amazon helps support the podcast that you are listening to, the Eddie Trunk Podcast, by keeping it free, offering my show a small commission on the products you purchase. So the next time you purchase anything from Amazon, whether it be for Valentine's Day, which is coming up, or anything else, first click on the Support the Sponsors banner on my PodcastOne.com show page. That's PodcastOne.com. Hit the Eddie Trunk podcast page. There you'll see Amazon and all the other banners for my sponsors. You can even use my Amazon banner if you're located in Canada or the UK. And to make it easier for all future purchases, feel free to bookmark my Amazon URL. In addition to Amazon, be sure to support all the sponsors you see up there on the PodcastOne.com Eddie Trunk podcast show page. They all help us out to keep this podcast free, which is, of course, how you want it. And how I want to keep bringing it to you. So thanks to Amazon. Shop away. It won't cost you a penny more to buy through the links, but it helps us out greatly and appreciate you doing so. All right, coming back, this week's interview, Jakey Lee and Greg Chiasson from Red Dragon Cartel. Get ready.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, guys, Valentine's Day around the corner. Yep, it's coming. Are you ready? You know you got to do the right thing. You know you got to deliver the flowers. You got to. It's Valentine's Day. You got to come up with something good. Do what I've done in the past, man. I'll tell you, Pro Flowers is unbelievable. You know all our friends are going to ask, so what did he get you for Valentine's Day? You got to have something cool. You got to, you know, now you got social media. They're going to post pictures. You got to deliver something cool for Valentine's Day. And I've got something cool for you at a great price as well. 100 Blooms of Love with a free glass vase for just $19.99. Are you kidding me? How can you beat that? And you can even upgrade a little bit if you want and add gourmet chocolates and a stuffed bear for just $9.99 more. That's crazy. It's less than $30. Bear, chocolates, flowers, crazy, right? All you got to do is go to proflowers.com and use my code TRUNK, T-R-U-N-K. That gets you the goods. Proflowers.com, TRUNK, T-R-U-N-K, and get that deal. Proflowers is quick, easy, and delivered on Valentine's Day. That is guaranteed. You can't beat the price. You can't beat the convenience. It is absolutely incredible. I've done it. It works brilliantly. Great quality stuff, delivered on time, very, very affordable. Proflowers are also guaranteed to last 7 days or your money back. How many times have you gotten flowers and they're dead in like a day? You got to jump on this. The longer you wait, the harder it is to find roses at these prices. So you jump on it and maybe you'll get to jump on it. Sorry. You got to do it though. Proflowers.com. Use my word trunk as the keyword. Click on the blue microphone, top right corner, type in T-R-U-N-K. That's proflowers.com. Click on the microphone and type in trunk, T-R-U-N-K. Order today, because this deal expires. Proflowers.com. Order today. Just put in the keyword trunk.
Hey, everybody. I don't know if you've heard, but your favorite website, Chive.com, now has words. And it's come in the form of our shiny new podcast right over at Podcast One. So join us. I'm John Rezik. This is Bob Phillip.
Hi.
Every Thursday for a mix of Chive culture, celebrity interviews, and offbeat current events. You never know who's going to drop by the studio, and you certainly never know what we're going to say to them. So it's the Chive podcast. It's total ear candy. There's no snark involved in this. And you can download it now at Podcast1.com. That's podcast1.com.
True Car is changing car buying forever. True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Just in the first 6 months of this year, over 275,000 cars were sold by the True Car Certified Dealer Network, and True Car users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Just print out your savings certificate and take it to the True Car Certified Dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the True Car mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Son of a gun, look who's here, Jakey Lee.
Oh, my God. Hello, hello, hello.
How did that happen?
Well,
I've said this so many times, after decades of chasing you down, now I can't get rid of you, man.
Come on.
TV show, radio show, Red Dragon Cartel, L.A., New Jersey, New York, Vegas, Advamped. You came to my show in Vegas. It's like, it's crazy. We're like family now.
Okay, as long as you put it that way. I was starting to feel intrusive.
No. Come on, it's always good to see you, man. And look who you brought with you, huh? Greg Chason. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you.
Good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
The newest addition to Red Dragon Cartel and a re-
And or the oldest.
Well, let's get right into it. Tell me how.
How old is he?
Too old to mention.
Well, how did you reconnect with Greg, and why the lineup change in Red Dragon Cartel?
There was reconnect. I've been in touch with Greg ever since we first met back in
around 83, 84, something like that,
somewhere in there. And I've always kept in touch with him because we're buds. So I've always kept in touch with him, and with the whole Red Dragon Cartel thing, it was he lives in Phoenix, so you know, he didn't feel like driving up and doing any bass parts, and once we had the opportunity to once we had the opportunity to upgrade, we did.
Well, tell me. Listen. Let's be honest here. The guy you're talking about, Ron Mancuso, is a big part of making this record. And in all honesty, he's a friend of mine as well. Why did you feel the need to make this change? I mean, did you just feel it wasn't working with him, or?
Ron has his talents. I wouldn't say bass playing, or even playing live, is amongst them.
Well, he's a guitar player, as most people know him by trade. I mean, that's what he was in his own band, Beggars and Thieves, and all that. But you would acknowledge that he was a big part of you kind of coming back and getting back into playing rock music. I mean, because I reconnected with you through him, and I remember him calling you and like, Jake, come on out, Jake, we're going to do this, Jake. You know, so it seemed like he was the guy that kind of instigated all this. Would that be accurate?
Yes, it was a. Wow. It was
Come on, Jake. If we're going to talk, let's talk.
He's trying to be diplomatic, a nice guy.
Yeah, it's okay, but I'm just give, nice give you know. I mean, you've got this band. It's how long? A couple years old.
He was the mouthpiece, and I don't mean that in a bad way. He was the one who kept bugging me to do it.
Right.
And I mean, there's been a lot of people over the years that have tried to get me to do Mike Varney, tried to get me to come back out and do stuff. It was really Kevin Cherko though that was the key component.
Who produced the record.
Uh-huh. And knowing his work and that he had a certain heft to his name, he was the reason I decided to go ahead and try it.
Ironically, Kevin Cherko, the producer's heft, is with a former bandmate of yours, Ozzy, working with Ozzy on so many of the recent records. But do you think that Red Dragon Cartel would have happened and you would have even gotten back into playing music? Because we've talked about this a million times. You're off the grid for so long. Do you think that without the combination of Ron and Kevin, you would have eventually come back out anyway and played?
You know, I think I would have eventually, because at that point in my life, I was feeling bored, and like I wasn't making a contribution to the world. I think it would have been in a different format, probably, because Ron and Kevin, their input, it made it more Red Dragon Cartel-y, where I think where if eventually I would have started playing again, I think it might have been more of a blues context.
Kind of like what you did with the Retraced record?
Yeah.
With original material? Because that was mostly covers?
Uh-huh. Yeah. More blues-oriented, maybe even bluesier than that, because I'm getting older. And
him and I had even talked about it sometime between Retraced and Red Dragon Cartel. Him and I would talk on the phone every month or so just for a while, just see what's up. And he was saying, I think I have one more, you know, I want to make one more shot at this. And he was talking about what the concept would have been, and, you know, we talked about that. So while, you know, Ron and Kevin were involved in that, there was still, before that even came up, he was talking about doing something. Him and I were talking about what he was going to do, and I told him I would like to be involved in it if possible. So this was happening probably a year or so before that even happened.
So, Greg, people know, you, of course, you guys were both in Badlands together.
Yep.
What have you been doing? Have you been doing a lot musically in Phoenix since that fell apart, since that went away? Were you in touch with Jake the whole time? Like, because Jake was like the Howard Hughes of rock for a while. I mean, people were like, I went on a mission to find the guy, and through Ron and going to Vegas, I did, and we did this bit with him in my TV show where he just walked behind us, and we gradually unveiled him and all this stuff. But there was a long time. People just, you know, everybody knows Jake just wasn't doing anything. Were you guys still in touch back then?
I'd say probably there might have been a period where might have been a couple of years where we didn't talk. Maybe there might have been one or two of those kind of periods where he was just off doing his thing and I was doing mine. I wasn't in the competitive music business anymore. And
were you doing?
Well, I was playing in bands in Phoenix, but they were just primarily cover bands. I did a lot of records for Mike Varney and for some other Christian labels, that sort of thing.
Session stuff,
and wrote stuff for other people, and I wasn't really doing anything. I wasn't interested in going on the road or anything like that.
Do you have a business? Or are you in a – do you have
I teach baseball.
Oh, really? So, baseball?
Yeah, I teach baseball and softball.
Really?
And I have a band, an original band that I've been working on doing something for like the last couple years. It doesn't really have a name, but I've been writing material for it, but there's no timetable for it. But – him and I would talk, even if we didn't talk. There's probably a period in there for a couple of years where maybe we didn't talk, maybe 2 years, but we were always still friends. And then out of the blue, he would call me or I would call him, and it would just be like nothing. No time had passed.
Right.
So even though I was kind of in a weird way, I was waiting to see what he was going to do, because I'd always said I really wasn't interested in getting back involved in this unless it was with him, because I like the way that he writes, and it allows me to play the way that I play. A lot of people, I'm able to interpret his music.
You guys have a good chemistry.
I always say we're like opposite sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Real quick on the baseball thing, were you close to being a pro ball player? I mean, what is your expertise in baseball?
I played in high school. I got recruited by some colleges to go play baseball, but I didn't want to go to school. So straight out of high school, I made a left turn and became a musician. And then I still liked baseball when my son was born. He's now 23. When he was 4, he started playing baseball. I kind of wasn't on the road anymore. He's one of the reasons I didn't want to go on the road. And I kind of rekindled my love of baseball through him and started coaching him. And then people would ask me, hey, can you help my kid, this and that. So I've coached him all the way. He's in his final year of college. He plays at a college called Arizona Christian in Arizona, obviously. And then I have a daughter that plays softball also. And so I've been coaching them.
What's your expertise? Pitching, hitting? You have an area where you were excelled at?
My favorite thing to teach is infield defense, but I spend most of my time as a hitting coach.
Okay.
And I have a number of students. I worked at a place called Arizona World of Baseball, and I'm an instructor there. So
needless to say, now Jake not only has a great bass player in the band, but if you wanted some lessons in baseball, Jake.
What makes you think I need lessons?
He taught me.
What makes you think that I'm not an
awesome
baseball?
Is Jakey Lee an athlete? Are you a good athlete?
No.
No. Do you play any sports?
No, I do not.
I've seen you power drink.
Well, that's not really
a sport.
We hung
out at a bar, sure. The way you do it, it's a sport.
No.
I wouldn't say.
I'm not a team sport.
He's
a player.
Jake's plenty athletic. I mean, he's one of the things where him and I became friends was because he was into boxing and he has a martial arts background, and so do I. So we kind of, that was the first thing that kind of was the bond for us. So you got to be pretty athletic to do both of those.
Yeah, no doubt. So now getting back to this change now, Greg, you actually filled in on some Red Dragon shows before you officially became a member of the band. Didn't you step in for Ron on a couple dates at some point?
Jake called me and asked me if I would do the Tempe date, which is in Arizona. And I said, yeah. You know, first it was going to be a song or two. Then he called and said, do you want to do the whole show? And I said, yeah. So they came down. We rehearsed for 3 days. And I went out and did that show. And it was a really good show. And I had a really good time. And during that show, I remember saying to him, I think I could actually do this again. I hadn't done anything like that in a long time.
So got your juices flowing.
It was pretty fun. And, you know, I don't know. He had actually asked me if I wanted to do more of it. And I was actually committed to doing baseball. I had already signed some contracts to do some stuff. And I said, but after August, if you want me to be involved, I would be able to do it. I would love to do it. So then he said, yeah.
Well, let's also be honest here, because you getting that call, I mean, Jake, you know, we were talking about it before you walked in. Greg and I think you walked out for a second, but you know, the notorious first ever Red Dragon Cartel show at the Whiskey, which I was there, I hosted. I mean, coming off of that, I mean, you guys had a pretty tough recovery. And then, of course, there were a lot of people said things about, oh, you guys are canceling shows. And I think there's a lot of people, quite honestly, very surprised that this band still exists. I mean, you're both laughing. I mean, is it surprising to you?
No.
No, I don't
you
think
never
so. But I could see where
from the outside perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Especially after that first show. And then the canceling thing, that was just a really, really tough tour, which, in all fairness, when I first saw that tour, the first North American tour that we did after the Whiskey date, I knew I was, you know, getting up in years and that I wouldn't be able to do it. I couldn't. They had six shows in a row.
I'm laughing because you always talk about yourself like you're 89 years old.
I am.
You're not.
Oh, wait a minute. No.
Dude, you're not.
I was
that
big
old.
In 89. That's what I said. Which was a long time ago.
It was. Trust me, everybody in rock was bigger in 89 if you had a record out back then. You're not the only one.
But what was my point?
But
where was I going with
about
this?
About coming off of the first
aging
show and the fact
the cancellations.
Yeah.
I was up front right from the get-go. It was months before – well, 6 weeks. I'll say it was 6 weeks before we started that tour. And I said, there is no way I can do this. It is just not physically possible. You're going to break me. You're going to break me. And if you break me, I'll just, you know, I have proof. I can do it. I'll walk away and I won't come back. I said, you need to cancel this. You need to cancel that. I need a break here. It's just physically not possible for me to do this.
You have back pain, right? Don't you have back issues?
Yeah, yeah. Too much rolling around in the 80s.
Yeah.
But my back just can't take it. And if it's going to start causing me physical pain, then I just won't do it. So, like I was saying, I told them, you need to cancel this show. You need to cancel this show. And, ooh. We have management in the room.
Well, anyway. There's a funny story I'm about to tell about this that ties this all together, which is really funny. But I don't know if you know where I'm going to go with this story.
I do not.
This is – you don't know?
No.
This is classic. This is classic. Diana, who's sitting here, who is now your road manager. Is that correct?
Mm, yes.
Okay.
She's our everything.
She's your everything. She also books shows in the New Jersey area. So I know her from that. You and I, Jake, with the band, this is amazing. This just shows how, I don't want to say stubborn, but when you get something in your head, you don't give a shit. You're not going to cave. Because you and I were both coming off of the Monsters of Rock cruise this year. And we're walking through the Miami airport. And you and I were talking, and the rest of the band was there, and everybody was there. And that night, you had a gig booked at a place you're playing this Friday in New Jersey called Mexicali. So as part of my radio stuff, I market shows and do advertising for shows. And I'm talking to you, and we're all getting on the plane going to New Jersey because I live in New Jersey. You're playing in New Jersey that night, the band, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going through security, and my phone rings or a text comes in, and it's from Diana. And she says, hey, can you put a tweet out and tell everybody that the show tonight with Red Dragon Cartel at Mexicali is canceled? And I said, what do you mean it's canceled? I'm in the airport with Jake walking onto a plane that's going to New Jersey. Why would it be canceled? He's standing right next to me. And this was before she knew you. And she said to me, you're kidding. Can you talk to him? Can you see what's going on? I said, yeah, because we're all getting on this plane and he's going to land a half an hour from the gig. So I turned around to you. I don't know if you remember this. We're in the airport. I said, did you just cancel the gig tonight? And you just looked at me and goes, yep. And I'm like, why? We're going to New Jersey. You know you're going to New Jersey, right? And you go, and you basically told me what you just said on the air, that you laid down the rules of how many you're going to do based on how you're feeling and what you can do, and that management, agent, whatever, was not listening, and you couldn't bend.
They overbooked.
Yeah.
They overbooked me.
Now, what's really
they
funny...
They overbooked my back.
What's really funny about this is talk about turning a negative into a positive, because you went and rescheduled that show with this woman who you didn't even know until now, and now she is your, as Greg just said, everything. So how the hell did that happen? You went from a promoter who was pissed off at you for canceling to her being with you 24/7.
See, I don't. Were you pissed off?
She was pissed.
Oh, well, fuck you then. You're fired.
We're looking for a new everything.
He canceled on me. She's going.
But she understood. She saw the tour schedule. At least that's what she told me. This is the first I heard that she was pissed.
At the moment, she had a sold-out show and no Jakey Lee showing up, so I don't think she cared about anything.
6 weeks before, I told him, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this, cancel it. And management said, well, let's just see once you're on the road if things change. Things didn't change. And so I look like a bad guy when I'm really not.
I turned around to Jake. I go, you're going to New Jersey anyway, because I was trying to help Diana out as well. I said, you're going to New Jersey anyway. What are you going to do? And he just looked at me and you go, I'm going to get in the van. I'm going to drive to Philly where I'm playing tomorrow night, and I'm going to sleep. That was it. Away you went. And there's something very, like, it sucked. Of course, you made the date up, so it all worked out. But it sucks on one hand, but on the other side, when I see so many artists, I mean, there is something very rock and roll about what you did that day. You know, just saying, I don't give a shit. My back hurts and I'm going to sleep. It's very rock and roll, and it's also very old.
Yeah, yeah. The way you were saying it didn't really sound very rock and roll to me.
It's rock and roll in an Axl Rose sense. Where I don't give a shit, I don't feel good, and this is what I'm going to do.
Wait a minute, I'm sure we can think of a better example.
Well, you know, Axl does his own thing. I'm not saying you're that extreme, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't make people wait as long as Axl does.
How long do they wait? Only a half an hour?
Yeah. Yeah, about a half hour these days.
They're still waiting.
It used to be a 15. You almost could set your clock by how late I would be somewhere, and it was 15 minutes. It was almost always exactly 15 minutes. Now, as I've aged, it's half an hour.
So getting to the core of all this, I'm glad you're still doing this because I truly, really like the record. And the one thing, being at that first show, and this is all pre-Greg, of course. Greg is new to this whole thing, so he's probably learning about stuff that went on as he's in this, getting acclimated.
You'd be surprised. him and I would talk, so a lot of what you're talking about, I already knew about.
All right, but You're doing this this band, and you're kind of relaunching it. Would that be fair to say? Is this kind of like a relaunch of the group with Greg on board, and do you feel better about it? Because my take in talking to you leading up to this and from that first show at the Whiskey, which was rough for a lot of reasons, I saw gradual improvement. Every show I saw, you guys got better and tighter. You seemed to get more confidence. But there were periods where I would talk to you, and you kind of seemed very indifferent about doing all this again. You kind of were like, well, you know what? I don't feel like I was missed as much as people told me I was missed. You said stuff like that.
Yeah.
So how do you feel now?
I would say the indifference there wasn't so much based on that as really I like playing live. I love playing in the studio, but it all comes back to playing live. That's where the magic happens. That's where what moments of glory I have, it's on stage, it's live, and those are the moments I remember. And to be honest, in this band, before Greg was in it, I'd never truly felt that level of just awe on stage. And like I said, Ron has his talents. I'm not saying, you know, anything other than it just wasn't playing live and it wasn't playing bass. And so I never got that impetus, push that I needed to make playing live that satisfactory to me. And I happily say now, with Greg in the band, it's a much more aggressive band now and much more musical. And I feel like I can strive to be Jimi Hendrix or Coltrane or Bird. Now we're going way back. Yeah, I am old. to where I can – here's the song, it's going this way, but I can jump off the edge there and see what happens, and I know that I have my back watched, and other guys will jump off with me. Is any of this making sense?
Yeah, no, that you feel more comfortable. But the question I have about that is that coming off of those early shows, I think that the guy that everybody thought was going to be the casualty of Red Dragon Cartel and were screaming for his head, and who was a guy that, honestly, I can say with a clear conscience, I was one of the few that really publicly supported him. But it was Darren, your singer. So he's still in the band, as is Jonas the drummer, correct?
Yes.
So what were your thoughts when you heard all that outcry and after that first performance at the Whiskey, sticking with them? Did you have thoughts where you thought you were going to scrap the whole band, or did you?
No, no.
So what did you think coming off of that?
Well, it was a god-awful performance. You know, it really was. Anything that could go wrong other than somebody throwing up on stage or my pants falling down pretty much went wrong.
Which both may have happened as well. I saw some people puking in the corner. I was there.
But yes, if you saw that show and you're basing, because there was a lot of people not only mad at Darren, but mad at me. Like, what was I thinking? You know, How could you select him to be the singer? And obviously, it wasn't based on that performance because I hadn't seen that performance yet.
Well, it's the first show you did.
I've been around for a long time. I know a good singer when I see one, and it almost made me more determined to prove to everybody that I did still kind of know what I was doing, because he is an awesome singer. He is a great singer.
Well, and you're talking about, you need a singer that can sing Ozzy, that can sing Ray Gillen, that can sing all the stuff on Red Dragon Cartel record, because you have a lot of guest vocals on there. Mm-hmm. So you got a guy that can kind of has to cover a lot of territory.
Yeah.
Locally.
And does it every night.
Yeah. And that was the thing about him that I said, yes, the performance needed a lot of work, but the guy was a drummer. So he was probably not making excuses for him, but I don't know how much fronting he did. So that, coupled with first night jitters, coupled with alcohol, coupled with what have you, very well played into that. And no, it was not good, but I agree, Jake. I saw him in him that night. Hey, if they work with this guy on a lot of levels, vocally, he can do this. He just needs someone to work with him. And I wouldn't have thrown the baby out with the bathwater, and I'm glad you didn't, because I agree with you on that front.
And another thing is, my very first gig with Ozzy was pretty much a replica of the Whiskey Show. It was horrible.
How so?
It was well, I went to England, and I had to rent all this gear, which I wasn't familiar with, and they got me a guitar tech. So we had, I think, three rehearsals, and then it was our very first show. And when I got there, they told – there was no sound check because we were opening for Whitesnake, which at that time in 1983, I was like, what? Wait a minute. Which Ozzy Osbourne did I join? The Ozzy Osbourne I joined – is an opening for Whitesnake, but we were, so we didn't get a sound check. I go out there. There's brand new amps that I've never seen before in my life. I pick my guitar up, strum it. It's way out of tune. And I look around for my tech. Finally, one of the other guys comes up. Oh, he never showed. You're going to have to go it on your own. So I'm like, okay. I don't have a tuner or anything. I'm trying to get the keyboard player to hit a note so I can tune. And I plug into the amp, and there's nothing coming out, so I plug into another amp. Finally, something's coming out, but they had the wrong cabinet mic'd, so there's nothing coming out of the PA. And we started with a, I don't know, so it's like, you know, one, two, three, boom, guitar, 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 it's me.
Right.
There's nothing coming out of the PA, and what you can hear is horribly out of tune. It was really, and I was greeted with a whole row full of Brad Gillis fans, because that was my first gig. They didn't even know. They're all holding these Brad Gillis signs.
Really?
And they're looking at me like, who the hell are you? And it was a really...
This was in England?
This was in Finland. Helsinki, Finland.
That's funny, because Brad has been on with me a million times, and Brad always talks about being dropped in and people giving him grief because he wasn't Randy. Obviously, it's a different scenario because Randy had died, but still, he had that whole thing. So I'm sure there's a part of Brad that would feel pretty good about knowing that at least in the beginning, he had won enough people over that they were giving you shit.
Yeah, oh, I accumulated both of Randy's and Brad's fans.
Any Bernie Torme fans in there giving you grief, too? Or?
Oh, I wish there was, but no.
Because he only lasted a couple of shows, but he was before Brad.
I mean, I like Torme's playing.
Yeah,
I mean,
he wasn't right for Ozzy, but...
No.
I don't think, but...
No, but so I had a horrible show. I was sure I was going to get fired. We walked off the stage. It was a horrible... it was like the Whiskey Show. It was just... Anyway, I walked off, and I was sure... Ozzy walks over towards me. I'm like, okay, I'm getting fired. That was it. That was my big shot, and I'm gone. And he put his arm around and said, well, can only get better from here, right? And, I mean, he could have broken me at that moment, and he said that. And I remembered that. When I walked off the stage with Darren, and I saw him looking at me with like puppy dog eyes, like, oh no. So I said the exact same thing. So it felt good to be able to give somebody a reprieve.
Now, when the dust clears from that first show, do you have a sit down with him? Do you discuss things? Do you start working with him? Do you say, I mean, how do you, how, because he's come a long way as far as a front man and, you know, for the band. How did you work? Did you or anybody in the band work with him, or did he just say, I'm going to pull it together on his own?
Yeah, he knew. Nobody knew better than him that he had screwed up big time. And I didn't need to say anything. He knew what he did wrong, and he fixed it.
Because unlike your day in 1983 with Ozzy, today is social media, internet, crazy world, where everything you do every second, a minute later, is there, audio, video, everything for everybody to see.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with that, and not to mention the limitations that come with that, too, because people will listen to something. It amazes me how many people will post something on YouTube that they recorded distorted off of their phone and try to make a determination if a song is good or not. Like, you can't – when it's really ready, let me know. You can't – but everybody is taking things in such a different way than we're used to that
– It is very strange. I mean, in the old days, you could have a bad show and make up for it. Now you have a bad show and they don't even necessarily acknowledge that you had some good ones. I mean, we're kind of in that situation now because we just did the Whiskey again, and it was a great show. It was a really, really – I give it a 9. I rate all my shows from 0 – well, no,
oh,
1
Darren,
to 10.
Darren had to come out on that one as Robert Plant. He had to be that good.
Yeah, he knew he had, he had something to prove, and it was a great show. There's not even a whisper of it on the
of
internet.
Of course. It was great. Why would anybody talk about
exactly.
it? Exactly. You know, you're only going to get hate online. That's it. You're only going to get hate.
You know it's good by the lack of response.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible.
Well, when I did the show in March in Tempe, he had called me and was saying, you know, I want you to, you know, be in the band, this and that. And to be perfectly honest, I wanted to see how good Darren was because I had only heard about the one show and he was saying he's a good singer, Jonas a good drummer. I wanted to see for myself. And I when I did the show with them, I was really impressed with both of them. And I – what was it, the fourth or fifth show maybe?
Yeah, about there.
Darren was right on top of it. I was like, holy crap, this guy really is good. I mean, and the thing, like you said, he's got to cover all these different singers and make it believable. And the other part of it, and I don't think it's easy, is all the naysayers that say he isn't the guy. To take that kind of abuse from people who probably wouldn't know a good singer from a bad one just because, like I said to you earlier, everyone gets to be Lester Bangs now. They can write on there and pretend they're a critic. He takes it well, and it doesn't seem to bother him. He comes back. Every show, he's a really, really good singer.
Yeah, really I agree with you. And I honestly defended him quite a bit when that happened. I agree that it was bad, but I saw something in the guy that I said, well, this can be fixed. This is workable. This is – if he didn't have the voice, then you had a real problem.
Now he's got the chops, but, and he's great on stage. And that – I mean – you could have really good vocals but be pretty boring or vice versa. He's kind of like the complete package. And the same with Jonas. Jonas doesn't get very much recognition as much as he should. He's a really, really good drummer. After the first couple shows on this last leg, I went and talked to him, and I said, man, I think Jonas is great. I didn't realize – every show we do, I realize how much better he is than I initially had thought. So I'm really happy being a part of something with – this kind of musicianship.
I know you just did, what, 5, 6 shows?
Eight. Seven.
Playing in New York City tomorrow at Webster Hall, playing back to the scene of the crime Friday at Mexicali in New Jersey, in Teaneck. It's a fun place. Cancel it, Jake. Just to mess with Diana right now. I'm canceling it. That's not the third in a row, is it?
No.
All right, good.
Okay, we're really not canceling it.
You better not. That's the one I'm going to.
Well, they have good food there, so.
I told you that.
See, I'm at least going to show up for sound check and eat something.
This is the conversation I had with them walking to the plane. I go, I've been there. I've done that room. They'll give you some food. They got, you know, they take care of you. It's a good place. Nope, going to Philly and sleeping. That was it. I texted her back. I go, hey, this guy ain't changing his mind.
Yeah, but you know what? If you come and watch the show, you know, we're older guys, but we don't act like it. I mean, there's a lot of running around, and, you know, maybe it's not the exact same energy level we had in the late 80s, early 90s, but it's pretty damn close.
Mm.
I mean, we're not sitting on a stool, you know, strumming acoustic guitars. There's a lot of moving around on there. I know because I feel at the end of the show, I'm going, I don't remember.
It's all
this
a trick,
hurting.
Though, on my part. I'm just trying to keep my balance on stage.
It's just him tripping over his cord.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just tripping over stuff and trying to keep my balance.
Well, that's a funny thing with me, too, because I told this story in my first book that, of course, Jake doesn't – I would never expect Jake to remember. But Jake saved me. We're talking about embarrassing moments on stage. Jake saved me from probably embarrassment I would have never recovered from in my entire life. And I think I told you this, but this is this is 83, was the year I started in radio. Talk about being old. I'm right there with you guys. I started my radio show in New Jersey in 1983. And on that tour for Ozzy, they were doing something where they would go into these markets and they would offer people, radio stations and programmers or people who are playing the record, the opportunity to be in the show. And by being in the show, it would mean you would come out and deliver a goblet to Ozzy during Journey to the Center of Eternity. Mm-hmm. So in New Jersey at the Meadowlands, they picked me to be that guy because I was doing a metal show, like the only metal show going, one of the only ones at the time. And they offered for me, I was 19, to be in the show and deliver the goblet to Ozzy dressed as a monk. So they put this, I have a picture of it, this big black, Jake, you, I mean, every night it must happen, so you remember somebody was in that outfit, you know, in this black robe with a hood. And at the bottom of the stairs on the side of the stage, and they said, go up, don't, I remember the instructions, I remember vividly about it. I remember the robe stunk horribly because, you know, 50 people wore it the night before it got to me. All sweating profusely from nerves, and they never washed it. And they put the robe on, and I remember they say, when we give you your cue, you go up the stairs, you walk across the stage, you walk to Ozzy's mic with the goblet, you hold it, he'll take the goblet out of your hand, you turn around, you walk down, you walk off the stairs, and you're done. Do not stop, do not pick up anything off the stage, and do not look out into the crowd. So I did that. And I, Jake was, and who I didn't know from a hole in the wall. I knew who he was as a fan, but I didn't know him personally at all. Your guitar chord or somebody's chord was in my pathway to the stage. And just a second as I'm about to trip on it, you gave it one of those whip moves and got it up underneath my foot so I didn't trip. And I will never, I'm indebted to Jakey Lee forever because by doing that, he spared a 19-year-old the humiliation of falling down in a hometown in front of 20,000 people at the Meadowlands flat on my face at an Ozzy show.
See, the sad part about that story is I was trying to whip the cord and hit balls with it.
But that Motley Crue opened that show, I remember.
Hmm.
And I think Wasted. There was three bands.
Oh, it was Wasted. Yeah, Wasted was on the tour for a while.
I think
yeah.
it was Wasted. And Motley, and you, what a show. And I'll just never forget that. So that was my first introduction to the graciousness of Jakey Lee looking out for me that night. So I appreciate that. I'd like to publicly thank you on the national airwaves 31 years later for saving my ass like that, Jake.
You are welcome.
You might have scarred me for life, and I would have never done radio again, and we wouldn't be sitting here talking about Red Dragon Cartel. I want to go back to something you said a little while ago about this record. The Red Dragon Cartel record, and the record you think you may have made if... What happened there?
Robin Hood's calling me.
Oh. The record you think you may have made if Ron and Kevin Churko weren't involved, that you would have done something bluesy. My question to you then is, how do you feel now that you've lived with this record, Red Dragon Cartel, for a while? How do you feel about it? Do you like it? Are you a fan? Is it the record you still... Are happy you made?
I am happy I made it. I think in reality that'll probably be the last time I make a record like that. If I do another record, it's going to be more eclectic, I think, because I have a lot of interests in music and I like exploring a lot of different things. This one was very what's the word I'm looking for? Curated by Kevin and Ron to have a certain overall sound and song structure and whereas I'm, especially at this time in my life, I'm much more into exploring weird stuff or more extreme stuff. Like, come on, Greg.
Gotta
is this
get the
first
new
time
guy
you've ever
line.
Been on radio? What's going on?
Gotta
here?
Get the new guy in line.
Uh, It'll just be, it wouldn't be as cohesive as this one is, where every song sounds like it belongs on there. And I know this isn't probably a good thing that I'm saying. It's not going to get me more record deals, but I would have a more eclectic, more extreme going from this place to that place, like an acoustic blues going into an industrial type thing. I like exploring a lot of different things, and I think if I do another record, it'll be more along those lines.
Do you want to do another record?
Maybe. Right now, I just like playing live. Right. That's what I've missed the most. So I'm going to ride that horse as long as I can.
So you're going to – I mean, beyond the dates you have coming up, and where can everybody see all the dates that are there? Is it reddragoncartel.com? Okay. Beyond these dates, you played Japan, I know, recently, right?
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience?
Oh, I love Japan. I love playing Japan. I wish we had more time to explore over there, but it's Japan. Yeah, it's wonderful, and it's there's so much more hardcore in a way, like a polite hardcore, if that's a possible thing. Whereas the curtains would be drawn, and you're wondering, is there anybody out there? Did anybody show up for the show? Is there anybody? Because they're so quiet and polite, and then the curtains open, and they go nuts.
When was the last time you had played there?
Last time we played there.
Did you play there at Badlands?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on the
it would have been
tour.
89.
So it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Now, in your family tree, is your mother or father Japanese?
Mother.
Your mother is.
Uh-huh.
Do you have family there?
Yeah.
You do?
And that was the first time I got to see them, too. So, yeah, Japan was really a lot of fun.
So are you like a conquering hero when you go to Japan? Like, do they have, like, you know, because you're kind of one of their own, at least half? One of their own?
Half their own.
Do you speak Japanese?
Oh, I only know how to say really bad things in Japanese. Sort of like my Spanish. I really only know how to insult or, yeah.
So how many people come out to see you in Japan? Like, is it markedly more than you would get in the U.S. for a gig? Or is it still a club show? Or
yeah, there were still club shows, but they're all pretty much sold out, right?
Yeah.
So there's the potential for – you always want to go a little bit smaller that shows you can sell out someplace. Then you don't know how many more seats. This is part of the biz here. You know, you don't want to go in a place where you might not fill it, because then they know exactly how many people you draw there. You want to go to a small club, sell it out, and then the potential could be anything. There is no exact number.
I'm nodding my head because I can't tell you – how many times I've had this conversation with artists. To me, it's so much cooler to see an artist underplay than go into a building that's curtained in half and has no vibe, and you know that they put only a quarter of the amount of people the place could hold. To me, it's so much cooler where it's like, damn, it's a tough ticket to get in, or the place is packed, or whatever it is, it just feels better like that. And I never understood. Like, I go to a lot of arena shows now. You have this thing where everybody in the world is on the road now because it's the only place to make money, because you don't make it selling records. So more people are touring than ever before. And then you go into these buildings and, like, there's so many arenas that can't put – they can't fill all the dates. So they're giving the room away a lot cheaper than they normally would. Hmm. And then as a fan, you go in there and three quarters of the arena is cut in half with these curtains, and it's just cavernous, no vibe. It just sucks. It's always cooler when there's a vibe in the room and people are trying to get in.
And I like playing clubs. That's my preference. Clubs and then small theaters. Those, because then you have this more intimate atmosphere, and it just feels better. And it's a different when you play arenas or when you play festivals. It's a whole different animal. It's more of a performance then, more of a visual, make everything big performance. Whereas in clubs and small theaters, it's more musical to me. I can play around with what I'm doing musically a lot better than you can at a festival. At a festival, you can't really pull that off. So I prefer it, and there has been people, management included, that can't believe if you have a choice, would you rather play club or festival? A club. I would rather play a club. I like playing clubs.
So would I. The vibe is just so much different in that kind of a setting as opposed to big outdoor something or other.
Well, as a fan, strictly speaking from a fan perspective, if I'm going to see a band that I really want to see and that I really love, without question, I'm way more into a club or a theater or a House of Blues sort of vibe or anything like that, way more than even an arena or a festival. Now, if I want to just go and I'm kind of indifferent about the band and I want to see people and hang out, have some drinks, I don't care what's going on, then a festival's fine. But if you really want to take in a show and get the vibe and really the sound and see and hear things the right way, we've got this venue on Long Island that's been there forever. You've probably maybe played it with one band or another, Jones Beach, down the line. But it sits... I don't know if Ozzy ever played it back when you were in. That would have been the only band, unless Badlands opened for someone there. But it's a big outdoor amphitheater. And it sits right on the water, which is a beautiful setting. But the problem is because it's right on the stage, it's literally on the water. Like, you have to go under a tunnel to get to the stage in and out. Hmm. And it's a great, beautiful setting. But what happens by the beach? Tons of wind. So when you're out front watching, that sound moves around the whole time. And it sucks. You can't really get into it, I find, when I go to shows there.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Sound-wise, yeah. That is another thing. You can control the sound much better in a club. And I was going to – I saw ZZ Top twice in the 70s in an arena. And they were good. You know, they were good. They were ZZ Top. Then in the 80s, when I was in Ozzy and I was in London, they were doing a secret special show at the Marquee, which is a club. I saw them in a club, and they just blew me away. They were so much better. Not that I'm suggesting they start doing clubs, but they, especially ZZ Top, you know, beer drinking party band. They were. That was one of the best concerts I ever saw. Was in that club with ZZ Top, and I love playing clubs.
Well, I can tell you, they're doing theaters again because they're playing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're playing a Bergen Performing Arts Center in New Jersey in March, which is probably 2,000 max. So they're, you know, that's probably not the career trajectory they were hoping to take.
Yeah.
But as a fan, if you're excited about seeing them, it's much better to see. I agree with you in a setting like that. Hey, so what, as far as the shows you guys are doing, what have you changed the set since the last incarnation of the band? Are you doing different material? Have you put in different Ozzy or Badlands stuff or stuff from the record?
We're doing a lot of ABBA.
Actually, yes to all of that. Yeah, we have we've changed some of the songs around. We've added like a Red Dragon Cartel song, "Wasted," to the set, and we're doing a song off "Bark at the Moon" that had never been played live before.
Which one?
Maybe you have to. Yeah,
well,
like you can't look
like
it up.
10 shows.
I know, like you can't go on the internet and find it. Now you see. Now you see me. Now you don't. Or
okay.
Now you see it. Now you don't. Yeah. Whatever the thing's called, that song, and which has never been played live, other than by us. Because when I was in Ozzy, we only did maybe 3 songs. I think off "Bark at the Moon," "Journey," "Bark at the Moon," "Rock and Roll Rebel." I don't think any of the other songs were ever played live.
None of those songs which you had anything to do with writing, of course.
Yeah, so I didn't care. But, yeah, because I remember he was very scared that he was scared people weren't going to like me. He was scared people weren't going to like the song. So we only did 3 songs off that, and most of the set was old Ozzy and Sabbath. But, yeah, so now you see it. Never been played by Ozzy or anybody else live until now.
Wow, there's a little Red Dragon Cartel nugget for you right there.
Plus, we do some other Badlands too.
Like, again, there's no secrets because it's online.
Dreams in the Dark,
which we probably played a dozen times in Badlands.
Dreams in the Dark.
We never played.
That's a big song.
We never. We would play it and then we would not play it again for a couple months.
Really? Why? That's like that was like the lead single from the record.
I think my take on it is we recorded a video for it that took like 33 hours, and by the time we heard it for 33 hours straight, we just didn't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah, we got tired of the song. We quit playing it towards the end of Badlands, and now we're playing it again.
Wow, that's crazy! I never knew that because that's like Badlands had a hit, that would be the song. That's the closest to a hit anybody would know.
And we play something else off Dusk called Healer, which
What about Rumble and Train? Rumble and Train?
Oh,
in there?
We kept that. Yeah.
All right, he'll do that.
All right, that's a good thing. Otherwise, I may not come on Friday. I don't know. But so that's good. So you're mixing it up. You're trying some new things, and you seem happy with. You seem like you're. I don't know. Would reinvigorated be the wrong word?
That would be the right word.
Right word. Good.
Eddie.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah. No, I look forward to the shows and more so than before, although I did before too, for all you people that bought tickets to the earlier shows. Yes. I look forward to those too. But now, I really look forward to playing the shows now.
So how long are you going to stay out? How much more touring is there?
We're figuring that out. I know... we have this leg that leads up until just before Christmas, and then we do a couple of shows. Around NAMM?
Right after NAMM.
And West Coast?
West Coast, maybe Canada.
Ew! I mean, yay!
We're on in Canada, Jake. Watch out! This is heard in Canada.
You
right
know what?
Now.
I'm a Canadian.
It's not really Canada. I have a problem with it's the border. It's those guys at the border.
What do you have to hide, Jake?
I don't have anything to hide, but they want me to prove it every time. And I'm getting old. I have a doctor that does that for me now.
Oh, my God. It's too funny.
I want to take it to Japan one more time.
Were you in when?
No, and that's why I want to take it to Japan. I love Japan also.
What about Download? You did Download too, right? Was that pre or post? Was that, that was before
I
Greg?
Didn't, yeah, my first shows were the... ones that we just got, the seven we just got done.
What was Download like, Jake?
Download.
England.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
The
Download.
Festival.
Oh, anything? Well, I got to meet, what's his name? Fozzy.
Jericho?
Yes.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Jericho's one of my best friends.
Oh, really?
But hold on a second. You played Download where the biggest rock stars in history have played. From Sabbath to Aerosmith to AC/DC, and your excitement from Download's meeting Jericho?
Yeah, he's the only.
Oh
yeah.
My God, his head! Right now, his head is blowing up bigger than it already is. I'm never going to hear the end of this from him.
No, it's funny because there's all those other bands. I'm like, whatever. And then I see Chris Jericho walk by. I'm like, holy crap! That's Chris Jericho. My girlfriend's, who's that? He goes, he was a wrestler. When I used to watch wrestling, he was one of the wrestlers.
You're a big wrestling guy?
I was. I was back then.
See, I was too. And this is funny because Chris has been on my shows 1,000 times and we text every day. He's literally one of my best buds. But I haven't followed wrestling since I was a little kid. So when I'm talking, my era of wrestling is Ivan Putski, Bruno Sammartino, Bob Backlund. I stopped after I was like 12. So I don't know any of those guys, including Jericho, who would call me constantly and try to get on my radio show. And I wouldn't let him on because I didn't know who he was. He knows this story. And then I learned a little bit about wrestling now through him. But I don't know him at all as a wrestler beyond the periphery. But it's very funny to me that you said that. And he will toast me about that forever.
It gets funnier, actually. To me, it does anyway. So I chase him down. The only guy I'm going to chase down.
Tony Iommi.
No. And then finally I get up to him. I said, Chris Jericho, right? And he kind of looks at me and turns his back and says, yeah. And then he pulls his phone out and pretends like he's got a call. And I know that move. I know he doesn't have anybody on his phone, but he's just like, yeah, okay. And he turns his back to
me. He blew you off.
Yeah. And then I had a hat and sunglasses on. And I said, oh, well, I just really wanted to meet you. My name's Jakey Lee. And so I turned to walk away, and then he turns around and went, Jakey Lee, no!
Suddenly nobody's on that phone, huh?
Yeah,
I seen that move.
Yeah, he hung up real quick. But it was just, I don't know, it's funny. Because I'm a musician, so I see somebody on TV, and that's who I'm going to, like, chase after. Well, not chase after. Hey, let's keep... I don't want it to go that way. Why are you looking at me like that?
I'm on TV. I mean, I don't know if you want to chase after me, but...
Okay, now that I know. I did not know that.
You've been on my TV show, Jake.
I know, but I never watched it.
A lot
it.
Of times. You never watched yourself back on that metal show?
No.
Really? Did you never watch yourself play on it?
No. Because I know what I was playing like that day.
Do you not like seeing yourself? Do you ever see old videos and watch
them? I don't like watching me, no.
Greg, no?
No.
No Badlands. You never fire up an old Badlands video and show the kids this is what Dad used to do?
No, my kids fire that up on their own, and my son or my daughter will actually say, hey, there's some new video from back in the Badlands days that I'd never seen before, and I'll look at it for – okay. And then I don't watch it. Same thing with all the – now, like you said, everyone's got a camera phone that's shooting video, and there's tons of stuff online. And, you know, my son and daughter will watch it, and I'll watch it for a second and go, yeah, I look old.
Yeah. I bore me.
Yeah.
I think I'm very boring to watch. Yeah, whatever. But I do every once in a while when I need a good chuckle, I'll go YouTube Jakey Lee Shreds. Do you know that video?
No. Was that an instructional thing?
No.
What is
you
it?
Don't
no,
know it, really?
No, seriously.
Because there's a whole series of those. No, they take a – they well, in this case, they took a Ozzy when I was an Ozzy and I was doing my guitar solo. And then they take the sound out and somebody overdubs a guitar that's really, really bad and really out of tune and really sounds horrible. It's hilarious. You gotta
why do they do
up.
That?
Just for a
– just to mess with you?
Piss take?
No. It's almost a tribute because they
do
it.
Oh, someone trying to play like you? So it's their tribute to you?
It's – no. It's – you have to – it's like kind of like a kung fu movie where somebody overdubs silly things coming out of their mouth instead of what they were actually saying. Do you know what I mean? It's a parody, but it's so well done. You would think that was me playing except for that it's – really, even worse than I could play. It's hard to explain. It's hard to.
I wish I had that kind of free time
honor.
To do this stuff.
It's an honor. It's an honor because the guy took a lot of time to do it and to make me sound horrible. But like I said, I consider it more of a tribute. He's done it with a bunch of guitar players, a bunch of bands. It's hilarious. I can't believe you don't have any idea what I'm talking about.
I try to not get caught up in the YouTube vortex because it'll all of a sudden I'll look and 3 hours will be gone and I didn't do anything productive. I'm constantly getting sent links of people that are my favorite guitarists or bands. Like, you know, Dana, the woman who does the news on my website, she's her and I are huge fans of John Sykes. So she'll send me these links of like, I found Sykes in 84 playing with Thin Lizzy or Whitesnake, and then I'll click that and I'll watch that. And then, of course, you know when it ends, it's like, here's 15 other suggestions. Oh, let me watch
and
that one.
Yeah, it's hard
and
not to.
5 hours later, I just wasted the day watching YouTube. So you get that's the same reason why I don't play video games. I've never played a video
game. So you're
saying
you wasted the day watching John Sykes? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I love John, but yeah, I got to pay the bills, you know? Got to do what you got to do.
No, but really, really. Jakey Lee Shreds.
I'm going to look it up.
It's hilarious. I've seen it dozens of times, and I cry every time. It's so funny.
Hey, did you hear from anybody from the Aussie camp about Red Dragon Cartel at all?
No.
I know you were uninvited to a Sabbath show in Vegas because you told the truth, God forbid, on that metal show.
I thought I said it very
diplomatically.
Diplomatically.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. You and I are in the same boat with that one, pal. There's no honesty doesn't work. You got to.
The cat's out of the bag.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad you own that stuff, as you should, at least telling people you had a hand in it. Financially, you don't. How does it. Just one last time for the record, just for people listening. How does it happen that you write Bark at the Moon and. Do you have to? What do? You signed a waiver? You just took a chunk of change and signed a waiver and said, it's okay, I don't need credit, I don't need any more money, and just sign it all off? Is that what happened? Were you drunk one night, duped into it, or did you do it willingly?
Oh, man, this could... Okay, here's the truth. This is really going to get me more hot water, but whatever. I'm in hot water and I don't see a way out.
How is telling the truth hot water? Unless on what you signed, you were told you could never talk about this.
Yes.
Oh, non-disclosure.
So they could
thing.
Sue me, but go ahead.
It's 30 years ago.
Yeah. I was told from the get-go, you write part of the songs, you'll get writing credit, you'll get publishing. That's part of your deal. I said, okay. So we recorded the album. I'm recording the album at Ridge Farm in Scotland. And I'm, you know, this is in the middle of Scotland, in the middle of farmland. It is actually a farm. Ridge Farm is actually a farm. The recording studio is in the barn. And so I'm by myself. I don't have management. I don't have a lawyer. I don't have anything. Anyway, but they promised me you'll get what's coming. And I keep asking because I'm getting really close to finishing all my stuff on the record. And finally, once I lay down the final track of my guitar playing, they said, ah, we have the contract for you. And in it, it says specifically, Ozzy Osbourne wrote all the songs. You had nothing to do with any of the writing. You have no claim to publishing. And you cannot say so publicly. And I looked at it. I'm looking at Sharon and said, this is not what you told me before. And she says, no, it isn't. Why do you think I'm going to sign it? She says, because if you don't, we'll give you a plane ticket. You go back home. You stand in line and you sue us. In the meantime, we have all your tracks. We'll get another guitar player. He'll redo your tracks and you'll have nothing.
Amazing.
The only reason I'm saying it now is because that was mean. That was mean.
Oh, yeah.
What am I going to do? Really? Am I going to say, fine, I'm going home, take my tracks off, some other guy will get all the credit for playing guitar, and I still have to try to sue you for the rights? It would have been just not a good decision.
Well, what happened then after you swallow that pill? What happens with Ultimate Sin?
Oh, well, then I refused to do anything until I had a contract in front of me promising me, you know, writing credit and publishing.
Did you read Bob Daisley's book?
No.
You should.
Yeah.
I mean, Bob is a guy that's lived that about 8 times over.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Bob from record one through No More Tears, Bob was writing and playing bass. I had no idea Bob played bass on the No More Tears record.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the Ozzy doctor from Crazy Train on.
Yeah.
Largely uncredited. And
at some point, you have to wonder, how many times can you go ahead and do that and complain about it?
Well, that's what I said to Bob. How do you keep, like, you get bit by a dog once or twice. How many more times do you stick your hand in the cage?
Yeah.
He had an explanation for it at the time, but he was involved in the two records you did, right? Bark and Ultimate Sin.
Mm-hmm.
Did you work directly with him as far as writing or?
Yeah. It's funny because when I was relearning Now You See It, Now You Don't, I could remember vividly when we wrote that song together and how it was kind of based on Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin. We were trying to come up with a riff like that, and I had the riff. He wrote the bridges, and we both wrote the chorus. And I can remember him sitting there and me sitting here and writing that song together. He had a lot to do with I came up with most of the riffs and most of the music. He would add things that made it special.
Mm. So many stories, man. Just scratching the surface. Jakey Lee and Greg Jason of Red Dragon Cartel.
Well, I'll tell you, you were talking about Jake. I want to say one thing here about you. You were talking about Jake saving you with the cord. The first show I did with Red Dragon Cartel in Houston, I dropped about 6 fusion fission device bombs on stage where I just completely didn't know what I was doing for a second. And he came up after that show and patted me on the back and said, don't worry about it. And because I'm a perfectionist, I'm like really.
See, you guys think these are nice things. What I really had was a sign that said, kick me.
Yeah. Well, I was going to throw that in later.
I put it on his back. I'm not a nice guy.
He is. He's like the Jakey Lee.
Hope you enjoyed this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. Thank you so much to my guest, Jakey Lee. Thank you, Katie Irizarry, for producing the podcast. I'll be back again next Thursday. Remember, all new, to download or stream, go to podcast1.com or iTunes for the newest Eddie Trunk podcast. Subscribe as well. New every Thursday. Have a great week, everybody, and thanks for listening. And thanks to Jakey Lee and Greg Chason, my guests this week.
Thanks for listening to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.